Thrasfote, Diadweef, hello. I'm Howard Crane with EV Radio, and this is the Russia Dispatch, a regular broadcast from behind enemy lines with the aim of correcting NATO and Western media bias. This is Dispatch number 5, April 3rd, 2022. If you're viewing on YouTube, check the description for a link to the show on evrn.net to find us wherever you listen to podcasts. As the world bifurcates between NATO and Russia's allies, censorship will inevitably expand to silence all critical voices, but they will never censor our secure servers, so subscribe while you can. Excuse my absence for the past number of days. I've had personal things to attend to, and the events of the past week have left me feeling uneasy for the fate of the people around the world. On top of that, I spent 5 hours putting together a video only for my video editor to stop working completely. Putting that much effort into something for it to result in nothing took the wind out of my sails, and I decided it was time for a break. Before I get into the meat of this broadcast, I should mention the incident in Bruka up front. I can never say with absolute certainty one way or another, but from what I've seen, I'm leaning heavily towards this being a staged event or an atrocity committed by somebody to frame the Russians. A critical examination of the videos and photos will result in the same conclusion. Add to this, the Russian military has been withdrawing from areas of Ukraine and haven't been in Bruka since March 30th. I come to you amid the death pangs of the West and possibly the eve of Klaus Schwab's Great Reset. Those of you more well-versed on the current situation already know that Europe and America have rejected oil and gas flow from Russia and her allies, instantly resulting in fuel prices not seen in over a decade. Due to the fact that the West simply hasn't the infrastructure to escalate oil extraction and processing to meet its needs, America had turned to oil-rich nations, which it called tyrannical and oppressive until recently, only to be told no. They're now going to dip into their emergency reserves to delay the inevitable. Our misleaders know that this is just the beginning of the consequences of their actions. It's the view of more balanced commentators, such as the folks at the Duran, that these people have made a foolish commitment and now they are trapped either by their own hubris or conceit. They cannot find it within themselves to admit that they've fucked up and ask for the Russians' forgiveness, so the taps once more flow with the black gold that keeps civilization on its feet. As a result of this hubris or conceit, matters will only get worse, as 2 minutes of thought would reveal to the dimmest among us that it's not only private cars that require fuel, but airliners, tanks, jet fighters, battleships, and most frighteningly of all, trucks and cargo ships responsible for delivering the majority or all of the food we eat, as well as equipment to make that food and other commodities. What most people don't consider is that modern agricultural practices are not sustainable and rapidly deplete the topsoil necessary to grow nutritious vegetables and feed livestock. As a result, we need fertilizers derived from oil to trick the soil into yielding vegetation. Coming into the first growing season of the year, most of the West has low reserves of this. I imagine the assumption of most people is that this is easily fixed by replacing our cars, trucks, and cargo ships with electric ones. It's disputable whether this is even possible. But it's certainly not possible within the time frame between now and the economic devastation ahead of us. Engines and vehicle bodies don't appear out of thin air. Even if they did appear out of thin air, how would we power them? Despite thousands of beautiful landscapes around Europe being destroyed to erect wind turbines, these and other renewable resources only account for a tiny portion of our energy requirements today. Never mind adding trucks and cargo ships to that load, which will increase the demand manifold. Even with electric cars being a rarity in my native Ireland, the government had to delay the closure of 2 coal-burning power plants, which was part of its green roadmap. Even with these plants open, we were officially warned of blackouts and power rationing before the Ukraine crisis. Add to this, there's only so much coal in Europe and America, which is why coal makes up only a portion of the power grids of most countries, with another being natural gas, which comes from the same place as oil does. But let's say we really put the pedal to the metal and littered our countries with wind turbines and solar farms, which, by the way, nobody wants built beside them.
We're Tammy and Joe McKenzie from Glencoe, PA. We live between Somerset and Cumberland, Maryland. Behind our home houses 68 wind turbines. And ever since the startup of the turbines, our life has been in turmoil due to the noise and the shadow flicker that is created from the wind turbines. And we wanted to make a video so that people would not have to be disturbed in a manner that we have been disturbed due to the issues and the problems that the wind turbines cause for us. Oftentimes, communities are approached by the wind industry to house a wind turbine on their property. And with that, they are given money in return for their lease. And with that, a lot of people they have a gag order placed on them so that they can't talk about the issues that are associated with the wind turbines. For us, we believe that our story needs to be put out there so that people know exactly what's going to happen, because had we known the ramifications of the wind turbines in such close proximity to our home, we would have had a choice to maybe voice our opinion in not wanting them to be placed so close to our home. But we did not feel as though we were going to have an issue with the wind turbines. There have been so many farms placed in our county that not too many people complain. We have heard of people complaining about wind turbine problems, but we, not being close to them, have said, oh, what should be the problem? There shouldn't be a problem with them. But now, living so close, we do realize that there are problems. We were finding that we were having problems sleeping at night and staying asleep. And we did our own research and we consulted our own expert to do testing in our home for what is called infrasound. And with that testing, it's found that our home has very high levels of infrasound. And that can also have health implications on people, because it's noise that you do not hear, but it can cause vibrations within the body. So many nights, neither one of us sleep, and the first question that we ask each other every morning is,
how did you sleep?
How much sleep did you get? Did you sleep last night? And there are nights when we do sleep that when you wake up in the morning, you feel as though you didn't get any sleep.
But let's say we really put the pedal to the metal and littered our countries with wind turbines and solar farms. We would still need rare earth materials and other resources that are virtually monopolized by Russia and the countries sympathetic to Russia. The West has backed itself into a checkmate, responded by shooting itself in the foot, and will likely respond again by shooting itself in the other foot, unless the people rise up against their misleaders and signal to the East that it's time to repair relations. This, sadly, isn't likely to happen, as the people of the West are a fundamentally broken people, and our democracies are broken. They're riddled with crony capitalists and the managerial class. Last week, Russia released a list of unfriendly nations, among which is my own previously neutral Ireland. We're neutral by constitution, but it seems that that is now just a piece of paper. The fact that my country, which buys virtually nothing from and sells virtually nothing to Russia, and cannot impose any military threat whatsoever is added to this list is indicative of why it was created. It's not merely a question of economics or military power, but diplomacy. It's primarily a list of countries hostile to Russia culturally. Days into the conflict, a Catholic priest attacked the embassy by throwing red paint on the Russian eagle emblem outside the gates, and just a week later, a man reversed his truck through the gates of the embassy. A man who, by some strange coincidence, happens to sell Catholic Church paraphernalia. We also have word going around of people going into East European stores and interrogating the staff on whether or not they're Russian. Before you think this is just the ignorant potato pickers being ignorant potato pickers, there have been instances around the Western world of Russian stores and public buildings being vandalized, Russian heritage people being accosted and assaulted, and just a general air of hostility, quite reminiscent of the early days of COVID. There was at least one incident in Ireland where a Chinese woman was being verbally assaulted by another woman in a supermarket in Northern Ireland. Heartbreaking and disgusting behavior. We should be equally disgusted by the behavior of many in the wake of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. On March 29th, Ireland escalated things further when our foreign minister expelled four Russian diplomats, effectively shutting down the embassy. Similar actions have been taken around the West. The Russian Minister of Foreign Affairs has put out a statement entitled Commentary by Russian Foreign Ministry Spokesperson M.V. Sakharova on U.S. orchestrated expulsions of Russian diplomats. Quote, the press release issued by State Department spokesman Price, in which he openly gloats over the expulsion of Russian diplomats from several European countries, is indicative of the real nature of U.S. relations and its satellites. Some may be embarrassed to take part in this American orchestrated spectacle, while others, on the contrary, are eager to earn praise. They will be held personally responsible for their actions, while their bilateral relations with Russia will be sacrificed and their embassies in Moscow subject to our inevitable retaliation. None of this, of course, is new. Washington is not ceremonious with its allies, nor with those who, for one reason or another, find themselves in the orbit of American influence, demanding submission and renunciation of claims to autonomy and sovereignty. This is the essence of the notorious Western solidarity, in which the leader easily sacrifices the wingnuts in his own interests, using them as expendable material in a geopolitical game. Unquote. On March 31st, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov had equally strong words for the international community, speaking to Russian media. Quote, a new reality is taking shape. The unipolar world is irretrievably receding into the past, and a multipolar world is being born. This is an objective process that cannot be stopped. There won't be one single ruler of this new reality. All key states with a decisive influence on the world economy and politics will have to come to terms. Being aware of their special status, they will ensure the observance of the fundamental principles of the UN Charter, including the main one, the sovereign equality of states. Nobody on earth will be considered a second-rate player. All nations are equal and sovereign. Unquote. While once North America and Europe seemed to hold all the strongest cards, their sanctioning Russia has activated a long-planned set of agreements with her allies, which is also drawing in multiple other countries which have been ignored or deemed unworthy by the Western hegemonic sphere. From the words and actions of Russia and her partners, such as China and India, a new world is taking shape which will leave the West in the dust as long as it keeps fighting against it. We are at a fork in the road where one option is being to sit at the table of equals and the other option being to fight against that change in an attempt to restore the status quo of 2 months ago when we held a position of more equal than others. The misleaders of the West are showing no indication of sitting at this table and are choosing to fight. There's only one possible outcome of this stance, escalation. There are three areas of concern for me here. The first being, why would Russia or the Russians trust us ever again? Given that they produce most of our oil, gas, and grain, it's at the very least a practical concern that we learn how to live with them. The second being, this is a definite bifurcation of the people of the world. The Irish artist, author, and magician Thomas Sheridan rightly called this a global Kristallnacht against the Russians. To save some listeners a Google search, Kristallnacht is translated directly as Night of Broken Glass, and is also known as the November Pogrom. It was a day of Nazi and civilian violence against Jews in 1938, 5 years after the election of Hitler. Call it hyperbole if you dare, but such violence is often a prelude to genocide, and it will be remembered by the Russian people for generations to come. It just might not mean much to you since you're not on the receiving end. But imagine hearing of your brethren around the world being attacked because of a leader you probably didn't vote for. Imagine someone defamed your national symbol, like Ireland's harp or the American flag, because of a foreign policy you had no control over. The third concern this raises for me is how much control the media has. We have to ask ourselves who the shadowy hand is which is pushing America and European leaders to cut off their noses despite their faces. Is it the Black Committee at the very top of NATO? Is it the Illuminati that secretly controls the world? Could it be both? Could it be both and the strange self-feeding loop of media and public demand? The people of America and Europe have been fed a steady stream of horror via the media of heroic non-existent Ukrainian fighter pilots and bombed children's hospitals. This has angered the people, probably prodding our leaders to take drastic actions. In turn, the media has seen how well this crisis sells and has continued to put out whatever unverified crap they find, and in turn, the people have gotten angrier, and now our misleaders are unable to back out of their harsh stances, lest they face millions of people protesting the perceived betrayal. This is a self-feeding loop which will only intensify unless someone intervenes on the media, public, or political level. No such intervention seems likely. And on the ground in Ukraine, this is what we know. Until a few days ago, Russia has been making slow advances, avoiding conflicts as much as possible, encircling key strategic cities in order to siege them, and using surgical missile strikes to take out military targets. The color of this conflict has changed significantly as, for the first time, Russian troops have entered into a Ukrainian city, Mariupol, in order to purge the city door to door of Ukrainian military and neo-Nazi battalions. As a side note, I've been reluctant to use the N-word until recently as I, being a Westerner, was extremely critical of Russian statements which claimed they were fighting battalions of armed thugs. After enough research and hearing Ukrainians themselves speak in those terms, I'm satisfied that such paramilitary groups have been absorbed into the Ukrainian military and possibly have a lot of political influence. The following is a live clip which was removed from the rebroadcast of the Brett Breyer broadcast on Fox News.
I want to have you clear something up for us. And this is these reports about the Azov Battalion that is said to be Nazi-affiliated organization operating as a militia in your country, said to be committing their own atrocities. What should Americans know about that unit, about those reports?
So Azov was one of those many battalions. They are what they are. They were defending our country. And later, I want to explain to you. Everything from all the components of those volunteer battalions later were incorporated into the military of Ukraine. Those Azov fighters are no longer self-established group. They are a component of the Ukrainian military. Back in 2014, there were situations when our volunteers were encircled, and some of them did violate laws. laws of Ukraine, and they actually were taken to court and got prison sentences. So law is above all.
With that in mind, it's not a huge leap of logic to see how forces hostile to Russian troops would be hiding in civilian structures, necessitating ground troop sweeps of areas, missile strikes, and artillery bombardments. To get a sense of the suffering of the people of Mariupol, I would suggest Patrick Lancaster's YouTube channel. Patrick Lancaster is an ex-US soldier who has visited Ukraine and the Donbass on multiple occasions before the current hostilities, and is currently publishing videos from within Mariupol. The common answer from civilians to his question, who is doing the bombing or shooting, is, how am I supposed to know? But on occasion, a civilian will report Ukrainian forces using their shelter as protection. In other words, they were being used as human shields. As of this writing, Ukrainian authorities are showing no signs that they wish to come to terms with Russia. However, analysts better informed than myself predict this military operation will be over within 2 weeks. The illusion that Ukraine stands a chance against Russia, which is created by Ukrainian Western propaganda, cannot last forever. On the subject of propaganda, Ukrainian forces made a successful strike within Russian territory this week by helicopter. A fuel depot in Belgorod, close to the Ukrainian border, was attacked and set on fire. This is the first instance of any hostilities within Russia so far. Commentators on the Duran presume the helicopter escaped detection by flying low, an impressive feat. The fuel depot presumably has a strategic value to the Russians, as it may have been critical to fueling their tanks and other vehicles, but it was a particularly costly mission for something so minor. Considering how the Ukrainians rely so much on wag-the-dog tactics to win this war, it may have been a desperate attempt at internal propaganda to increase the morale of the few Ukrainian fighters left. If you look at the work of Gonzalo Lira on social media, you will notice that Ukrainian propaganda didn't stop at the ghost of Kiev. Multiple videos from multiple sources are being produced on social media to give the impression that the Russians are taking more losses than they actually are. These commentators point to fighters wearing freshly washed clothes and unworn makeup after they were supposedly in a battlefield for days, as well as buildings and other landmarks that reappear in videos allegedly shot on different days and in different locations. As disgustingly hateful and corrupt as the Ukrainian establishment and their fighters are, I have to commend them on an impressive propaganda campaign which may yet win them this war. They really make the 1997 movie Wag the Dog seem prophetic. I wrote the script I'm reading over the course of the past week, and given the events of today, I should interject the following. I was going to warn of a false flag attack impending that would bring NATO into the fight. I echoed the concerns that many have that this false flag would involve biochemical weapons. I still believe that this is likely, but it seems we already have our false flag in the form of the Bucha incident. I won't show the videos here for YouTube reasons, but it looks like the infamous footage of Jonestown or the Heaven's Gate compound after the mass suicide. A completely empty town with bodies randomly laying down on the footpaths and the roads. No damaged buildings, no blood, no gore. It just looks like the individuals dropped dead as they were walking around. One individual can be seen lying sideways with a bicycle between his legs, as if he had just stopped pedaling and fell sideways. It's a strange scene that you might mistake for something out of the Twilight Zone. There are thousands of questions about that footage, including, as Gonzalo Lira aptly said, the extremely high-quality camera involved capturing it. But there are zero answers. And yet, war hawks in the West are using this as an excuse to enter the war as NATO. In the event that we find out the Russians definitely did commit this massacre, I'm sorry to say that they wouldn't be the first to commit horrific violations of international war conventions or violate laws of human decency. the Ukrainians have already beaten Russia to the punch there. Furthermore, the angelic NATO partners have also committed similar atrocities in their own wars of aggression. We must seek justice as an international community, but we must not lose sight of the fact that this is war, and horrible things happen in wars. Now back to our regular programming. I think I've adequately demonstrated how the media narrative in this war is important. For the public in the West and Ukraine to become aware that this war is already won by Russia would be catastrophic to morale and public faith in the current leadership. With Russian troops finally closing in on their key positions for the next battle phase, we must be on guard for a false flag which will blot out all signs of Russian successes and necessitate the involvement of NATO countries. This false flag will most definitely involve a biochemical attack, likely on civilians, and will be blamed on Russia. The narrative will be that Putin and his generals are, as another YouTube commentator jokes, demons from the ninth circle of hell, with absolutely no understandable motives, and will strike out in a childish fit in the face of defeat by poisoning thousands of civilians. We know the biochemical weapons exist because the Americans have officially acknowledged them, and we know they'll be used in a false flag attack because this same source speaking to the US Congress said the Russians will use them.
I only have a minute left. Let me ask you, does Ukraine have chemical or biological weapons?
Ukraine has biological research facilities, which, in fact, we are now quite concerned Russian troops, Russian forces may be seeking to gain control of. So we are working with the Ukrainians on how they can prevent any of those research materials from falling into the hands of Russian forces should they approach.
I'm sure you're aware that the Russian propaganda groups are already putting out there all kinds of information about how they've uncovered a plot by the Ukrainians to release biological weapons in the country and with NATO's coordination. If there's a biological or chemical weapon incident or attack inside of Ukraine, is there any doubt in your mind that 100% it would be the Russians that would be behind it?
There is no doubt in my mind, Senator, and it is classic Russian technique to blame on the other guy what they're planning to do themselves.
Does Ukraine have chemical or biological weapons?
Ukraine has biological research facilities, which, in fact, we are now quite concerned Russian troops, Russian forces may be seeking to gain control of. So we are working with the Ukrainians, on how they can prevent any of those research materials from falling into the hands of Russian forces should they approach.
After I initially wrote this script, Joe Biden has come out to say that Russians intend on using chemical weapons.
And now Putin's back against the wall. He wasn't anticipating the extent or strength of our unity. And the more his back is against the wall, the greater the severity of the tactics he may employ. We've seen it before. He's run a lot of false flag operations. Whenever he starts talking about something, he thinks NATO, Ukraine, or the United States is about to do it, means he's getting ready to do it. Not a joke. And asserting that we, America, have biological as well as chemical weapons in Europe, simply not true. I guarantee you. They're also suggesting that Ukraine has biological and chemical weapons in Ukraine. That's a clear sign he's considering using both of those. He's already used chemical weapons in the past, and we should be careful about what's about to come. He knows there'll be severe consequences because of the United NATO front, but the point is, it's real.
Perhaps senility grants one psychic powers or something. I will repeat what several others are saying. Why would a winning army needlessly use a weapon that would pose an equal amount of risk to their own troops and severely damage their international reputation even further? Nobody would. Nobody in their right minds. But the people under NATO will believe this, as they've been conditioned to believe the Russians don't have human comparable minds. We've been convinced they're unthinking brutes who simply enjoy inflicting pain on others. There's no reasoning with this intense degree of racism. It's also noteworthy that 30,000 troops are currently in Norway for the NATO Military Games Trident Juncture, planned at least as far back as 2020. Russia had been invited to spectate, but they thanked NATO for the opportunity and declined. This will carry on for the next few weeks and could possibly be a hotspot for a false flag. Carrying on from the general news roundup, I'd like to preach to the choir a little. I'm deeply disturbed by how entrenched this mass hysteria and racism against Russians is. Even minds I've come to think of as intelligent and critical have devolved into emotional and hate-filled parodies of human beings. The actions of Russia have been stripped of all possible reason and motive. Many people think the military operation in Ukraine happened simply and only because Putin is a psychopath. We're only capable of seeing things through a Western lens, and we refuse to humanize the other. Please, please, try to speak to your fellow Westerners and urge them to see the other side of the story. This might be a futile endeavor, but the ugly truth is that when you dehumanize another person, it is always a prelude to violence against that person. When you can no longer see that someone else might be motivated by their own sense of self-preservation, and they've been downgraded by you to the station of a beast, you are justified in your own mind to commit any manner of atrocities against them. I've been Howard Crane with EV Radio. Remember to subscribe to the Russia Dispatch here on YouTube, as well as on your favorite podcast service. David Zenya, Slonlat, goodbye.